This is the Turf Zone Podcast, your central information and news hub, bringing together professionals from turf associations across multiple states to share things to help you and your business. Brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Virginia Turfgrass Council. This episode is sponsored in part by ByeSod, world-class service on demand. Visit us online at www.buysod.com. Now, let's get in the zone.
Welcome to the Turf Zone. This episode continues our series on the USDA-funded Resist POA project. In this episode, we're talking to Jim Brosnan, professor at the University of Tennessee and director of the UT Weed Diagnostics Center. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So let's dive into this project that you are a participant with many other researchers. Most turfgrass scientists have had, for lack of better words, a professional relationship with annual bluegrass for their entire career. What's your POA story?
My POA story. Wow. I've never been asked that before. It's funny. I'll contend it's the most amazing plant out there, at least that affects the turf world. Obviously, it's a weed in certain situations, and it's a desirable in other situations, and the adaptability piece of it is off the charts high. I mean, we have POA documented on every continent, including Antarctica, which when you wrap your mind around that is kind of nuts. For me as a weed scientist, as resistance issues have worsened, I think my first resistance interaction with POA came in the late 2000s, early 2010-ish. I was actually on an extension visit in West Tennessee about a drainage issue and putting greens. And we were looking at putting greens and taking root zone profiles and talking about layering within the root zone and surface drainage versus internal drainage and kind of building a plan for how to combat that at this golf course. And as we were going back to my truck in the parking lot, the superintendent told me, "Have you ever seen Roundup not kill bluegrass?" And I said, "Well, no, I've never seen it. I mean, I've heard about it in row crop situations, but I've never seen it in turf." And he said, "Well, I've got fairways of it. Why don't you hop in the cart and we'll go have a look?" And that's kind of where it all started for me. And then it became one of those scenarios where the more that I would give presentations and talk about this, the more individuals in the audience would come up to me afterwards and say, "Hey, I think I've got an issue. Can you come visit me and have a look?" And it kind of grew from there to be the number one weed that my program here at Tennessee works on. The students and staff that work for me joke that it's POA 365 around here for 365 days a year. It's part of the conversation.
Sounds like a pretty pretty serious origin story of your relationship. So how does annual bluegrass rank in the list of weeds in Tennessee?
Well, I mean, that's a hard question to answer because, it all depends on what those rankings are based on. Is it the hardest, are the rankings based on what's the hardest to control? Are the rankings based on what's the most prevalent? Is the ranking based on what's most widespread? I mean, I think regardless of how you define the parameters, POA would be on the list. We're in a climate in Tennessee where it's almost kind of a perfect storm in the transition zone that, our warm season grasses are going to go dormant for extended periods and really offer no competition against POA invasion. And we also have climatic conditions that can favor POA growth for extended periods, not only in the winter, but sometimes even into the late spring. As we're recording this now in June, there are areas on golf courses where you can find healthy, mature POA plants. And that's one of the things I think we need to do more research on is to understand the environments that maybe facilitate that survival, because that complicates management. The paradigm is that this is a true annual, and in most cases, that paradigm is correct, but there certainly could be environments out there where maybe we can get persistence that looks more like a perennial than an annual.
Absolutely. So coming back to the scope of the Resist POA project, what objectives are you pursuing as part of that project? And I guess as a side note, what other interests pertaining to annual bluegrass are you studying separately?
So, you know, it's a fascinating project and really thrilling to be involved in because it's the largest national turfgrass project that I'm aware of, not only in funding level from the USDA, but just size and scope. I mean, I think we have 15 different institutions that are participating, which is really awesome. And, you know, we're all involved in these objectives to varying degrees. My program here has been involved in the survey and screening objective from the jump. We had some experience with that going into it. You know, we were lucky enough to receive a grant from the GCSAA to look at POA resistance on golf courses within our state. So it was a natural transition into the USDA project to look at POA resistance in more than golf, golf included, but we also touch on sports turf, sod production, and lawn care. So we've been involved in that objective. My program here has been leading the phrase mowing objective, which many of the listeners may be familiar if you're on Twitter. It's not really hard to find phrase mowing videos out there. And that's been really cool because it's new and it's kind of a non-chemical approach to tackle this weed that we've seen really promising results with summer phrase mowing leading to reduced annual bluegrass in the wintertime and Bermuda grass in particularly. We have a lot more to learn about how that varies geographically and with depth and across cultivars, but certainly it's been an interesting finding from this USDA effort in totality. We've been collaborating, you know, the lead on the genetic part of this and trying to understand the genetics of resistance and mutations within the DNA that can cause resistance has been my colleague, Dr. Scott McElroy at Auburn, and we've been collaborating with that group, sending plant material that has come through screening here to his lab so then they can do the genetic analysis to understand potential mutations. And probably one of the things that's the most different in terms of being a new area of research for me has been working in collaboration with David Irvin and George Friswold, David Irvin at Portland State George Friswold at Arizona, on kind of the human dimensions piece of this. You know, their work is to better understand the human element to resistance management. How do people approach decisions about POA control? What are the factors that they consider when they learn about a new technology and weigh the pros and cons of implementing that new technology? That's been really eye-opening because, you know, as a researcher, you can develop the most innovative solution that's based on the best biology and best chemistry that's available. But if the practitioner's not going to use it, then it all kind of falls flat. And this is the first time that I've been involved in an effort that is really trying to get at kind of the I don't know if you'd call it the sociological piece or whatnot, the human element and human decision-making piece of what we do. And my hope is that by trying to understand those dynamics, it's going to make the solutions that come from the research easier to adapt and more part of the turfgrass industry.
Definitely. The behavioral element is super interesting. And I know in Tennessee, where you are, our turfgrass managers are always looking for cultural practices that they can implement. And I understand that there's a balance of budget and time and manpower. Besides chemical weed control, are there other strategies to control annual bluegrass? Like, what are the most important cultural practices? You mentioned phrase mowing, but anything else that can be implemented to reduce annual bluegrass and turfgrass?
Well, it's one of the things that we're trying to better understand with this project. And, you know, one of the things I think we're all appreciative of as researchers is now having the funding available to answer those types of questions, those fundamental things about how does irrigation affect the annual bluegrass infestation? How does nutrient programming affect annual bluegrass infestation? how does mowing frequency, whether it's height, regime, or both, affect annual bluegrass infestation? You know, these are kind of basic questions that there's been small scale studies, single locations that have tried to make inference in this, and that's been helpful. But it's really cool now that we're going to be able to try to look at that at scale across a wide geographic range. And for me, I think that stuff is going to become more important, not only as we have increased scrutiny on the chemical tools that we have available for weed management in general, POA and beyond, but also, you know, moving into the COVID era, if you will, where we've been lucky in Tennessee that, you know, the majority of our turf grass operations were deemed essential and could continue operations during the pandemic. We are definitely going to see budget cuts, whether it's staffing budget cuts or resource budget cuts moving forward for turf grass operations across the board. And one of the things I think turf grass managers need to start doing is looking at their operations and defining kind of what's essential to them, what are their high priority areas, because we're probably not going to be able to manage wall to wall in the capacity that we had in the pre-COVID era, if you will, as long as these budget restrictions will be in place.
Right. So we have budget limitations, like you said, in this unusual time of managing turf grass. And, you know, another thing that has been affected is events. And I know that turf grass managers love their conferences and their education and recertification events. And I know that's been limited to a degree as well. And we're working with Jay McCurdy and trying to get this data and information out from the Resist POA project. I know that as far as USDA funded portion, you're about at the halfway mark. Are you able to get the information out in practical ways without those in-person events? And how should people be looking for the information that you're gathering from this project?
I think we have been successful so far. And obviously, this COVID situation is ever evolving, and we need to evolve along with it. And we had a national webinar, I believe, in March of 2020 that we had really good attendance. I think we had well over 350 people join us for kind of a POA update that featured a lot of the work that was going on here. In Tennessee, we, you know, obviously can't have our normal in-person events, as you noted. The university acted pretty quickly, and we developed kind of a digital learning series for the summer that we're calling Tennessee Turf Tuesdays, where turfgrass managers can join us on the first Tuesday of every month from May through October. And we have a one-hour webinar on a turfgrass topic of interest. And we've got a diversity of things that we'll cover during the summer season and into the fall. And the final webinar of that series will be hosted by me in October, where we'll talk at length about POA control and try to prepare turfgrass managers for POA control going into the upcoming POA season, if you will. That's been a part of it. I know that my colleagues at other institutions are moving towards virtual field days and trying to showcase their work in that manner. And that's all good. You know, the group of Tennessee here, you know, we started several years ago having a POA Day event online. So a streamed live digital field day on POA control. COVID threw a wrench into that in 2020. We hope to be back doing that in 2021. So that'll be another area to feature Resist POA work. I'd encourage those that do not follow it already to follow the Twitter handle, which is at ResistPOA, and visit the website, resistpoa.org. You know, those are obviously ways to get information that's coming out of the project. And most everybody involved has a fairly active Twitter account and shares information on Twitter that way. I know Turf Twitter is kind of a thing, and it's a place where turf grass managers go for info. So that's another area where you can find information from this project.
That's great information. Jim, I understand there is a really important element of awareness about the importance of turf grass for the general public and for legislators, as there have certainly been some challenges with legislation and limitations on herbicides. And you have had an opportunity to speak to that audience, a congressional audience, Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it ties in with the Resist Poa project?
Yeah, it was in, I think it was October of 2019, I had the opportunity to travel to DC and participate in a congressional briefing as a representative of the Crop Science Society of America and their involvement in NCFAR, which I believe is the National Coalition of Food and Agricultural Research. And kind of the impetus for that was to talk about the importance of turfgrass, the economic benefits that turfgrass has in our country, the environmental benefits that turfgrass has in our country, the societal benefits that maintained turfgrass has in our country and to the citizens of our country. And I tried to drive home that, you know, turfgrass is in every congressional district, and everybody that was in the room that day interacted with turfgrass that day, whether it was from their walk out of their apartment to an Uber or whatnot, their walk into the building on Capitol Hill. And we also, in that presentation, Crop Science asked me to kind of highlight not only why turfgrass is important, but why it's a commodity that is worthy of more funding. And we used the Resist Poa project kind of as a backdrop for that, to talk about kind of the what can be done when resources are available to better understand some of these basic questions about a turfgrass pest issue that affects so many. And bringing together researchers across a national scale from multiple states, kind of the impact that could have and all of the positive deliverables that could come from that. So it was a real honor to represent the turfgrass industry and all of my colleagues in the Resist Poa project in DC and speak about our work.
Definitely. Jim, thank you again for taking the time to talk to us today. And we'll look forward to following your results on Twitter and on the resistpoa.org website.
I appreciate the opportunity to come on. And please don't hesitate if there's anyone listening that has questions about what we're doing or just POA control in general. I think that everybody involved in the Resist POA project really values the land grant mission and the role that land grant universities like the University of Tennessee have in serving stakeholders across the state. So, you know, we are here to be a resource for those in the turfgrass industry. And if you have questions about POA control and ways we can assist with POA control, please don't hesitate to reach out. I think we're all in today's world ultimately available, whether it's email, phone call, Twitter direct message, what have you.
For all resources regarding the Resist POA project, visit our show notes and don't miss an episode of Resist POA or The Turf Zone. So you can subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit us at theturfzone.com.
You've been listening to The Turf Zone. Thank you to our sponsors, including BuySod, world-class service on demand. Visit us online at www.buysod.com. For more episodes of The Turf Zone, visit theturfzone.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.